Hey guys, it's Fifth Lauren, also known as 944. Don't forget Thorin's YouTube channel.
Right, this is going to be another episode of Reflections, my interview series, and this one is with Forrest. Pretty easy introduction there. Spoiler, I have been chasing this interview for about 15 years, so you know what? Maybe this is like a Moby Dick scenario. Maybe eventually you do get your white whale if you keep going. It's true, actually. People think I'm joking, Forrest. Even when you joined Desk Here, I was immediately just all over you. Like, what about now? Like, but you even did tell me, like, as soon as you joined Desk Here, like, look, it's not the answer to you. I just don't like interviews. I'm sorry. It's not my thing, right?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, that was like one of the things in my early career, right? I never did interviews. Never. I never did stage presence. Never did anything PR related at all. But the thing is, with you and me, we never had the chance to talk, actually. But I think this is a perfect opportunity to do so.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If people don't know, by the way, back then it also used to be where because media obligations weren't as much, everyone really could cynically just be like, right, who's the in-game leader? It's your job. And then that one guy just did like every interview. That really was how it was back then. That's why if people don't know, people like Khan and Taz were super, super famous. They weren't the best players. They were just the one that did every interview. Wait there 1 second. What just happened there? It's all good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, right. I know. It's like that was a super weird thing, right? Because that was a small part of NMP as well. Because we're Fifth Lauren and you had Freiburg who would do the interviews. You kind of had Fifth Lauren be the in-game leader. And as you said, way back as well, you had Robin in SK. Getro was actually one of the newer.
He actually sort of understood back then. He wanted to be famous in a way. It was actually quite a unique quality for a player, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. He had a different mindset compared to everyone else, especially me as well, because I never wanted to do anything. You had Alan. There was a lot of people who never did interviews. Probably could have been a lot more famous if they did so, 100%. So, yeah, Karn, Taz, good examples. They did everything, became famous really quick.
Along these lines, then, here's the question I would ask is, I've always got the vibe from you. I mean, it's sort of something I think you've even said in interviews. Basically, I've always felt like people tell you, you're the best, you're the greatest, you're the best ever to play the game. But you're just like, I'm just the guy who just likes the game. Like, I'm just happen to be good at it. Is that the sort of vibe you're on? It's always felt like it.
Yeah, I mean, I do get like proud is not even the word, but humbled by like people do consider me being like the greatest, right? That's an opinion they had. But yeah, my mindset has always been like I see myself as a regular guy who just plays Counter-Strike. I just love playing Counter-Strike. I always have, always will. I never really understood the hype. Can't really see myself like being talked in that sense that I am. But I'm super, super, super grateful that I am.
Sure. Right, obviously on this interview, because people know so much about your CSGO career, we want to go back to some of the 1.6 days. And I actually have a question, because I've noticed everyone else's interview with Forrest always only starts with that famous story of like, and then the Big Grip team won the World Esports Games, because that was just like the famous breakout big tournament. But if people don't know, if you actually were following Swedish Counter-Strike back then, Sweden always used to have a really healthy LAN scene. And I actually had a tournament I want to ask you about, which is a different one, which is I know that your breakout was the OptiHack tournament. So this was the one where, if people don't know, it was the same players. It was you and Temp, Paul and Robin, these guys that became famous later. But what people forget is this was one of the tournaments where it was won by that Khan mixed team, the Scorpiana, the Schoolboys, which was like at the time was like a big breakout story. Yeah, it was like a cool story. But what people forget is they remember that part. They don't remember you guys were in the final with them. Like that was a big upset. You guys were nobodies. And if people don't know, the teams you were playing back then, there was some real teams there. There was like proper professional teams and Catch Gamer from Norway and stuff. Like, was this like a moment? Was this a breakout moment for you?
Yeah, I think so. I think if I remember correctly, I think we played PSG, Pentagram.
The Pentagram is, yes.
Pentagram,
yes.
Yeah, we beat Pentagram, Neo, Taz, and the boys, and they were a lot more famous than we were back then, a much better team. We beat them, and as you said, we beat a few more teams. We played in a final. That's where we, as you said, I think that is where the breakout within the Swedish scene and potentially even international, because that's where we faced them and beat a lot of good players. And that's also why we got picked up by Big Grip after the tournament, by Calippo and Iskall, who saw the potential in us. So definitely, you're 100% right. I think people do forget that I did play in Embrace, was the name. I had a long journey with Doom as well, attending a lot of smaller LANs. I think one of the few good results we had was beating Was it beat? No, we were playing Noah, I remember, on Dust 2. We lost 16-14 on this LAN, and we were absolutely nobodies. We were like, I was like 13,
right. Okay.
13 years old or something. It was also a LAN. I don't remember the LANs, what the name was, but we had a lot of LANs back in Sweden. Anyways, yeah, 100% correct. Embrace was actually like the start for my breakup.
Along these lines, then, one thing I want to ask was, I always feel like people who aren't from Sweden don't understand like what the politics of the scene was. Back then, a part of it is either you have to go to a LAN like this, because like you're saying, you get a chance to play a real pro team, so you'll be able to show like on LAN that you're good, or you have to sort of like have a friend who vouches for you and gets you in the right like IRC channel to get in the gathers, to get in the pickups, to play the scrims, right? At this period of time, like, had you already gotten to that point where you were like playing with the top players? Were you getting scrims against real teams?
I mean, at the Embrace point, I would say we were playing against or practicing against solid teams. People were still doubting us a hell of a lot. People were calling us onliners because we haven't really been proven on LAN. There was a lot of, like, as I said, it was like a pretty closed group. It was so hard to get into that group of top teams. You had a lot of pro players back in the days in Sweden. There was like maybe 30-40 players that was like incredible big names in Sweden, and trying to get into that closed environment was hard, and the only way to do so was to prove yourself on LAN, and by doing so you need to attend these LANs, like I think it was called Optihack, and then
there's loads, Rendezvous, Birdie, Rendezvous back then, yeah, Birdie. It was a whole little circuit,
yeah, exactly. There was only little circuit within Sweden, and that was only way to really get acknowledged was breaking through LAN. But I remember, like, no, wait a second. My journey actually started a little bit early. My memory is going back to me. So virtual experience online was the first big breakthrough. That was Tempo, yeah?
There's a similar team, but I think you'd add Vordox instead, right? If people remember, he was like a like legendary figure
exactly.
In the scene, because he was friends with all top players and stuff.
So virtual experience online was actually the first where I got called in to play on an internet cafe in my hometown with Tempo.
Oh, right.
You had Legisten, you had Imitation, Cop. I can't remember even.
That's pretty
Carnage.
Good job.
You have a lot of names in that team. That was the first where they actually called me up and they were like, "Hey, you seem like a really good player. But we don't trust you. We don't trust that you can play this good." So they called me down. I roller skated down to the internet cafe, did my tryout on site, and they were very impressed. But that was back in the days when virtual experience lines. You remember that league? It was called
Swedish Esport League, right?
Exactly. Where every team needed to play from my internet cafe in Sweden.
Yes. So it was quite a clever idea, because what was clever about it was, because it was only in Sweden, obviously the internal internet's amazing, but at the same time it's LAN, because as you're saying, you have to actually be at a LAN cafe and play only from there. So it was sort of like a combination of the two. It's quite an innovative idea, actually.
Yeah, at that point in time, I think it was to this day, that is like one of the best things that could have happened to Swedish Counter-Strike of developing players. The funny thing is because it was so spread out in Sweden. You had like the northern part of Sweden. You had the middle part of Sweden. It was like a proper football league, but in a
yes,
but not in that closed sense that you couldn't participate in other tournaments. This was something.
Yeah, if people don't know, back then the only people who were Swedish who were pro lived in Gothenburg or Stockholm. As you're saying, you had to get into the lands. You had to go to them. Like if you live in where was that place? Like Valde, Uppsala or something. Where was the place he lived in the north? Like if you live there, you fucked. Like this is no Luleå or whatever. Like, if you live there, you're not going to be a pro. Like yeah, this league mattered for that. Like you're saying, it's a way to get known, right?
Yeah, it really was. I think it's a shame that it kind of, I don't know what happened or why it closed down. I think it's because the interest of internet cafes probably wasn't that big anymore.
Yeah.
It wasn't profiting good enough. But I really enjoyed that idea. That is something that definitely could come back potentially in a bigger market when Counter-Strike GO is keep on growing the way it is.
Sure. But
yeah, fun times, man. I had a lot of,
since you mentioned, like, as you say, this was in your local area, this VXO team, and you come from Väsby in Sweden, right? So another detail a lot of people do not know, Forrest, is they don't actually know that Tentpole, your teammate from this era, I'm guessing he came from the same area, right? It sounds like you just grew up in the same place.
Yeah, exactly the same place. So he was 3 years older than me. I think we have actually produced a few good talents from my hometown. You had Flusha. Who like until recently I just realized that we were attending the same school. I didn't know. We were attending the same school when we were kids. Obviously, he's a few years younger than me. We were attending the same school. I lived almost neighbor with him. And I mean, so the hometown has produced a fair share of pro players. But yeah, correct. Temple is from the same hometown. I think that's also why we stick together for quite a long time, actually. Yeah. That was one of the longer teammates I had than entered Get Right. But I think up till that point, I think Temple was the longest.
Let me ask you about him then, because I actually feel like he's like one of those forgotten players in history, partly because he ended his career in CS 1.6. I actually think off the top of my head, because I was there, I believe the reason he ended, because if you remember, he was in SK, was like one of those things where, you know this because you were in SK as well, right? The problem back then, it wasn't that they didn't pay you, it's that basically if a sponsor was late or didn't pay, then they couldn't pay us. So it meant that you just got the lag passed on to people like us. So at the time, the problem was, I think he just got in one of those bad ones where they like, it took 3 months and he was just like, right, fuck this, I'm out. But if you wait, if you know the SK way, if you wait, eventually you get it one day. Like, it just takes a while longer. So anyway, the question is this, right? I want to know, who was this guy's teammate? Because like I say, I was surprised when I found out he came from the same place. Because, yeah, you played together in this team and then Fnatic. And then the weird thing is, though, the two part ways, because there's that weird storyline where after your team got really good and had won like the CPL, this is what I want to ask you about. His official reason was something weird, like, oh, I don't want to be a pro. It's like too much travel. And it's like, you know, it's like not the life for me. But if you remember, I'm not even joking, dude. Something like 2 months later, he was like, I'm just going to join SK. And it's like, but they're the other team that goes everywhere in the world. Like, didn't that, wasn't that? That must have seemed weird to you guys. Like, what the fuck happened there?
And that happened many times with many different teammates as well. In 1.6, everyone was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm out. I don't want to be a pro player anymore. Traveling is too hard, and they quit, and then you realize that they joined you're like the biggest rival against exactly. you, and you're like, what the fuck is this shit?
You just played him in like finals all year. It's like, bro, you weren't supposed to be traveling. What the hell?
we could have been with each other, man. But I don't know. Yeah, so that was actually one of the reasons. I also think one of the biggest reasons we lost a lot of big names in Swedish Counter-Strike was definitely, like, as I said, if salaries were late, a lot of, like, When I was pro at that time, I was very young, right? I was living with my parents. But Temple, for example, he already got his own apartment. You had a few other pro players who had their own apartment. And you were barely making, like, minimum wage in Sweden. Barely. Like, the best players earn, like, minimum wage in Sweden. And some of the lesser, well, not as like, big names would earn less. So that you couldn't even cover rent, food, and all that. So especially when the payment was late, they would be late with payments for the apartment. And I think that one was one of the biggest reasons a lot of players dropped out. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that could also affected Temple to why he quit in the beginning. Like, I don't want to travel as much, and the pay is not as good as like working a normal job in Sweden. But then everyone comes to realize, holy shit, we're actually playing video games for a living. Yeah. It's actually freaking amazing that we're traveling around the world playing video games. They like realize that the moment they give it up, that's when they
Dude, yeah, you know how many players I know who even told me, although I really did actually start to hate esports, but then I went and did like an office job for 6 months, and about like 2 months in, you're like, shit, I might have made a mistake here. Because even if I thought I hated that other thing, like, I was like, you know, on the stage, like, people like, there's a medal, you've won, like, oh, it's amazing. Yeah, exactly. It's only when you're out of it you sort of realize what you had.
I think so. But I got that experience from the people who, like, dropped out of Counter-Strike. So I learned, like, holy shit, I'm not doing the same mistake. But I think that the payment was not as good, man. I think that's why, like, you had the players like, I can't, like, really recall, but I think DSN and Karn and everyone also kind of, I don't think it was necessary. Like, DSN was making money on...
He drew poker, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he's doing some side hustle, right?
Well. Exactly. So there were a lot of players into poker back in the days, and people just find the income, like, a better income outside of Counter-Strike. So I think a lot of people just, like, you had this really talented Norwegian player, Real. What's his name, Real?
Yeah, another poker victim, I think.
yeah, exactly, poker victim. Yeah, he was around the same age as me, I think.
Yeah.
Like, also one of that, like, my generation type player.
I heard he was supposed to play with you guys at one point. I think Khan told me or something, like, at one point you guys were trying to get him into Fnatic.
That could have been, man. I don't think I was in every single talk at that time.
Fair enough.
There was like a like Karn, BSN, and I think Inns were super, super good friends, even outside of Counter-Strike. And you would have me, and then you would have eventually, like, okay, doesn't matter really. But like DSN, Karn, and Archie.
That was the sort of Inns, the group.
Yeah, it was, yeah, exactly. They were like, yeah. They were like running the things. But
sorry, I imagine at some point later in the interview that topic might come up again. You know, maybe it influenced the career decision. So let's go back a second, because what I want to ask you before we move on, like, who was Temple as a player then? Because I actually thought as a player he was a very unique style of player, right?
Yeah, Temple was for me one of the first to really like outthink, and not necessarily his aim. His aim wasn't like the thing that stood out with him. It was like his positioning, his timing, the way he read the game or read the opponents. It was nothing that he could like transition into us. It was more his play style. He was thinking a lot. He was like a...
To me, it was a bit like Flusher. Like,
yeah, a little bit like Flusher, a little bit like Get Right.
There you go.
Kind of the same players who thinks a lot about a game. They don't necessarily have the greatest aim, but they do damage, and I mean they do a lot of damage at that. He was like, I think he was one of the best players from Sweden, and a lot of people do know him obviously because he did leave a mark, because he was an incredible player. So I think always calm and collected, trying to outsmart your opponents instead of brute forcing, which is kind of more my style of playing Counter-Strike, kind of just guns blazing, you know. Just go. So that was he was a really good teammate. Small anger issues, but didn't we all back in the days? I think in Counter-Strike, everybody were smashing tables left and right, and mouses being thrown.
Dude, I remember that clip. Do you remember this? It was on Fragbite, where after a game where you wrecked SK, Spawn was like, "I want to fucking break Forrest's finger or something." Like some, it was like some famous line. You had that one where you threw that bottle into one's face. Yeah. Remember that? Who was that? Yeah. Like Archer, when you threw the bottle in his face.
Yeah, Archer threw a bottle.
In my he threw it at you. Yeah, that's even worse, because it wasn't it like you were like looking at the monitor or something, it just came in your face.
And we actually won the game. That was made me so frustrated, man. Okay. It was like we won a game and a ball comes thrown like into my eye. Really,
as though you'd lost us a bit,
yeah. We won the game and I get a ball thrown into my eye, and I just go full tilt, man, because I can't put that into my mind that, well, like, why were you throwing a ball? We were winning the game. Why are you throwing a ball at me for? So then I gotta go full rage, but I smashed the chair, and this is like a lot of rage back in the days in Counter-Strike, but there was also more. Like Counter-Strike back in the days were a lot more vocal. I think Apex from Vitality is very vocal player, but that used to be standard, man. That was not just one player from a team. That were everybody was shouting. Everybody was trying to trigger each other. You tried to get under people's skin all the time, even like pre-game, during the game, during warm-up, like every single scenario, to try to psych out your opponent. And I think that was one of the glorious days of Counter-Strike as well, where you would feel like emotions would come through, like emotions you didn't think you could have, like frustration, anger. You would feel anger against opponents, but then the moment the game is done, not even when the game was done, you could let go of the emotions sometimes, because sometimes they really got under your skin.
So
the competitiveness was a lot more fun in a sense than what it is today. Now it's a lot of friendly.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because here's the problem with that. It's like, here's the difference, mate. That's the effect of cameras as well. You know what I mean? Because a lot of what you're talking about, like, some of it might have been like photographed, but like it was more like that. It was in the game was what people care about. Whereas now the problem is, because it's all filmed and everything's in a documentary and a big ESL camera, like everyone now has to just be best friends after the game, don't they? They have to say, oh, thank you. Oh, great to play. Was actually, like, mate, if people don't remember, like, the thing I'm thinking of is, like, remember after that World Cyber Games, where not only did you lose, but they're like fucking Lord, just like right in Get Right's face, like trying to fight him almost after the game. Like, before, like, dude, it was, some of the rivalries back then were real. Like, they weren't for the cameras at all. They were heated, right? Well,
yeah, they were heated. I mean, there were arguments and fights happening after tournaments, being between players and teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Real fights. It was just like, but in a sense, I think also that's why you see, I think you can see a lot more emotions being shown in 1.6 in tournaments. Like the famous clip from Taz when he calls his parent, like I think his family.
Yes, after they beat you in that IEM game,
you see Get Right on the floor. Everyone is just totally devastated because it was like a gritty environment to be in. You had like the fans right next to you, like
it was wild,
breathing you down the neck. Yeah. And I think there was something more, you were more naked in a sense, as an individual as well, in that environment. Now you're more protected in the stage thing, and as you said, more cameras perhaps, and so everybody's a little bit more shielded in a sense.
Right, here's the thing. I do want to address that first year in the Begrip team, but I don't want to spend too much time on it, obviously, because we don't want to like make half the interview about that and then the rest is like the next 15 years or whatever. So the brief topic I have is this, because it's an angle I haven't heard people talk about before. So first of all, one thing people don't seem to know is that the WEG tournament you won, what was weird about that was, because it was in Korea and you had to go there for like a month or 2 months or something. Mm-hmm. Actually, all the top teams didn't attend these events. Like, it was always a mixed bag. Like, you had like a few sort of good teams, like, or like you'd have like a good team, but they had a stand-in. It was always a weird mm-hmm. setup like that. So if one thing that people might not know is, even though it was like a big breakout for you guys to win, I actually know that particular tournament was one of the ones where a lot of the teams felt like who the fuck knows who's going to win these, like, because no one's ever played in that environment. Like, every tournament before that's like 3 days in one place, and it's a LAN. Like, this is like you're in this TV studio, and then you come back next week. But it's almost like Premier League or something, mate. And by the way, that alone was ruining half the teams, because like you said about the arguments, mate. Like, people just getting people to hold it together for a 3 day LAN's normally hard. Try getting some of those teams for a month to live with each other and then play the games. Like, you can imagine it's a very different environment. So on the one hand, you were going to South Korea from Sweden, and at the end of the year you were going to America for the CPL. So like, nowadays people will take this for granted for us, but back then I'm guessing this was like a fucking really eye-opening year for you.
It really was. I took a gamble. That was the year I really went and decided that I want to like gamble everything on Counter-Strike, because when Begrip asked me, and in that same, like when they asked me to, or when they asked our trio from Embrace to join Temple and Robin with me, join Calippo, and he's called In Begrip. At the same note, we got invited to WEG to in South Korea, and I just said to my parents, it's going to be like a 2 months. I'm going to be away 2 months. I can't go to or participate in school. I want to drop out. I dropped out of school, went to South Korea, and I had no idea what I was getting into, because it was my first international tournament. I never participated in anything else. I was always been grinding those Swedish lands, as we talked about previously. So this was a big breakthrough. I was like absolutely clueless. First time trying to speak English, you know, trying to, like, the whole thing was just immense, like so much information to take in at once. I was 16 years old, I believe. And on top of that, perform against, at that time, like the biggest names. You had like Noah. Fair enough, they didn't have like the full roster, they had standings. But I mean, the player names at that time were like, it was absolutely insane that I was going to play against these guys. And yeah, we did very good. And I think people got surprised that we could compete at that level. And yeah, sad that the team kind of didn't feel this, like we didn't really do much more with the group, actually. We went to CPL. That's about it. But that break, like that win, really helped me. I think in that sense, that Fnatic then maybe got their eyes.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. By the way, on the CPL topic, the angle on that I would just ask is this. At the time as well, the other angle a lot of fans might not get is, if you're a guy who's just living in Sweden playing small lands, like CPL back then was like the fucking mecca of Counter-Strike, wasn't it? It was like, that's, you remember all the videos of Potty and Heaton and Altspawn and everyone. The joke is, if you're from Sweden, that's almost like, that's how you know you've made it to the top of Counter-Strike, when you get to that tournament, right?
Yeah, CPL was the most prestigious thing you could ever attend. And to win a CPL would be something sort of amazing in that time. At that time, it would have been amazing to win those. So attending one, as I said, that was like, you peaked. Like, this is it, man. You made it. And you are now what everyone strives to be within Counter-Strike. You're attending a CPL. Everybody was even using the CPL GUIs in Counter-Strike. We have the background.
Right,
CPL.
Yes.
Everybody
true.
Yeah,
you're right. I know what you mean. He means that, like, basically you could, there was like a graphical overlay for CS when you set up all your things that they would have to do at the LAN. And the joke is, even people who weren't at the tournament, just so they could feel like, oh, I'm a pro, everyone was putting it on their computer. It's true. That was like the famous like thing to feel like you were cool. Laugh.
Exactly. Yeah, but that tournament, but that was a shame, because we got, I think in between us winning WEG and attending CPL, I think they had a WEG season 3, I believe it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what, around that time, even Temple, and even think Calippo at that time said that they don't want to travel anymore. And imagine, we traveled once. Once.
Yeah, it's
once
for sure. Time. Yeah, exactly.
We traveled one time, and they were like, nah, shit, fuck this shit, I'm done. And I was like, and this was my breakthrough, right? We won a tournament. I'm feeling hyped. I want to keep on pushing. Like, we're invited. We can, like, defend our title here. I think me and Robin and East Call at that time wanted to go, but they were, like, they were standing fast that, no, we don't want to go. And then it was, like, kind of shady. Like, okay, what are we going to play? So we didn't really play anything. And then we're like, okay, let's do one last, like, hooray with CPL. And that was the end of the team. So it was a weird team in that
you,
sense.
You did the original Last Dance. Who knew?
Yeah.
It was actually you guys, the original Last Dance. There you go.
Yes, it was super weird. And then, but I think at the same time, with, after that CPL, I think Fnatic, yeah, Fnatic reached out. And yeah, I think that is...
I've got a quick question before the Fnatic stuff, right? This is a weird one, but one thing that used to be really annoying back in the day, right? Because I was, as you can imagine, I was a super nerd, mate. I used to love all the POV demos and all the things. But what people won't know is every demo and movie wasn't on, like, one big website. In fact, back then, you watched, like, frag movies. Half the time, you had to go and find that person on IRC and be like, do you have a link on an FTP? Because, like, there wasn't websites, there wasn't YouTube.
Exactly.
So, like,
no,
this will sound weird, right? But back in the day, one thing that used to tilt me, dude, was when you would find a frag movie of a famous player and you were like, oh my god, this is gonna be sick. But are you ready? Because you should know where this is going. But then when you download it, you're like, oh, this is before he became famous, because that was what your frag movie was. Do you remember this? Like, and when I saw this frag movie, I was thinking it's gonna be amazing. But it's when you were like 15 or something, wasn't it? So I remember watching it being like, this is just all right. Like, come on. Because you're not even like playing against top players or whatever. Like, I'm not hating, it wasn't that great, was it? Like, it was just all right.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, my first frag movies were absolutely shit. As I said, it was like, I guess,
because didn't you make it yourself from like when you were a kid or something?
No, it was my brother who made it.
Oh, there you go.
It was just fooling around, and I was like super.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if people don't realize, it wasn't even from like pro player. Like, half of the clips are on like fucking, I don't know, Prodigy or Aztec or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, random bullshit, man. Just random clips.
Along these lines, though, the question is this: did at the time before you joined Fnatic, because you know how people are, dude, like, it's like, think about Simple now. Everyone now is going to tell you they said Simple will be the best from day one and then you in Hellraisers or whatever. But like, obviously, they're just saying that because he became the best now. It's easy to see now. At the time, at this point in time, when you get picked up by Fnatic, do you think there was actually, like, did other people in the scene know how good you are or what your potential is? Do you think people saw it?
I mean, that it's a tough question because we don't have the platforms as we do now, either the way we can talk or get opinions out of everybody. But no, I mean, I don't believe people thought that I would be that good or become like a good asset. I still, when I joined Fnatic, I still think people were a little bit doubtful, even though we won WEG. Like, not everything reaches everybody. People probably didn't even know that I have won a tournament before joining Fnatic, you know? So no, I don't think the expectations were very high on me when I first started playing Fnatic, no.
Because then the other angle as well is, obviously, from that big RIP team, at the time you played with Robban, then you guys, Temp Paul and you, went off and joined Fnatic, and then Robban was in, like, NIP, and then later, obviously, SK, and then you reunited in SK years and years later. So, like, was he actually someone, were you actually close with him in the big RIP days? Like, did he have an offer for Fnatic or something? Was there a reason you had to part ways? What happened to that?
We were super close friends. Me, Robban, and Temple X were really good friends back at those days. But it was just Fnatic reached out, and I think they reached out to Temple first, actually, and not even me. And I think actually Temple really helped me out there and, like, said he wanted me to join with him.
Right. He was like that was the package deal.
Yeah, package deal. If I remember this correctly, I think actually that is the case, because I think he wanted someone he knew, maybe from the same, we live in the same town, perhaps, that we could, that it was also an easier transition for him. So I actually think he helped me out on that. I don't think I was on their radar in the beginning, but when Temple said that he wanted to bring me with him, I guess they just went for it and turned out great.
Sure. Because actually, I wondered actually what you think, because it's weird, because Robban's one of the few people who's still around to this day. Like, obviously, he's coaching FaZe right now. They're having all this great success. It's funny, because here's the thing, mate. From being in SK with him, I can totally see why he's a coach, because the thing I would say about Robban is, he is just like, he's not even pretending, he is just a cool character. Like, he's just the guy who always just seems laid back. Nothing ever seems to get to him.
He is so, so good. I've always, when people ask me, like, who's the best in him? Like, who's the best English leader? I always... comes back to Robban most of the time. It's not that it was necessarily like this master genius tactic tactical guy. It's just the way he got the team to work. Yeah, how he made everyone like he made everyone feel like we, how should I put this? I'm losing my words, man. He made everyone really understand that we're a team and got everyone together, everyone on the same page when we were playing, in a way that not Karn could, not Exist could. He brought everyone wanted to do this for the team, and I think that was one of his greatest strengths, to be able to get everybody on the same page.
When you came to this Fnatic team, obviously this is a key moment in your career. So many things were accomplished here. So give me some thoughts on some of these players. Like, let's start with DSN, because I think one thing, dude, that history has really forgotten is I always give this analogy, right, where I always say in CSGO what impressed me so much was that I felt like Neo and Taz did a move a bit like what DSN and Khan did at the end of your time with them at Fnatic. They sort of like accepted, like, we're going to sort of become the role players, the support players, the background cast so that these stars can succeed. And I always thought, as a result, though, unfortunately, DSN particularly, people won't know before he did that how good he was, how good, like, what a like, mega opera he was, and what a good LAN player and stuff. Like, before, when he was actually, like, at the beginning of this team, he was one of the best players, right?
Yeah, he was like, the best player out of, like, opera out of Sweden, right? Even in Fnatic, when he was playing with Spawn's brother, was it called Megaton, I think?
Yeah.
Megaton or something, yeah. When he was playing there, he was just destroying. He was destroying when he was playing Counter-Strike with AWP. He was definitely a star player. One of like the greatest opera who came out of Sweden. You had Wally and you had DSN, you had a few others, but DSN definitely stood out as well, together with Wally, I would say, as the two best operas. But yeah, he was like, so I was super nervous actually joining this team, because now we join, but I'm playing the Begrip, yeah, sure, Kalippo, he was a known player, Izcal, yeah, he had a stint in Eyeballers. Yeah, they were pro players, man, but they weren't like the big names in Swedish Counter-Strike. They were names, yes, but they weren't the big dudes, man. Karn and DSN were like, they were like more like superstars, it felt like, both of them. Karn not so much, but DSN definitely was a superstar. Karn even stopped playing Counter-Strike at this time. He actually joined in the same time I did, because he was working at gas station. Gas station. So he came back in the same time. But DSM, yeah, I was nervous, man. These were big.
I can't conceive, because especially if you know the Nordic gas stations, I can't conceive of Khan being like, "Do you want pickles on the hot dog?" Because you know that's like what it's like if you go to those in Hanoi. I guess it happened once.
Yeah.
What about obviously we're going to talk a bit later, because there's a reason why, like I alluded to, but just give me the basics initially. Like, when you first met Khan, because here's the premise, right? People might not know this, but if people are old school fans, they'll know that, like, famously me and Lerpis were sort of like against Khan in some way, but then we did that podcast together and now we're like some sort of like, maybe we're like friends or like frenemies or whatever the fuck you call it, you know? So back then, basically, like, people are going to think I'm going to diss him, but like, what I want to ask is this, like, what was it like initially to meet Khan? Because here's the problem, is if he wants to be charming, he could be very charming, but he can also be somewhere, he could be really standoffish, or you could definitely take like a bad perspective on him. So he's even though now he might be really good in interviews, he can be a tricky person to deal with. So what was it like the early times with Khan? Is he controlling IGL? Is he a captain? Do you have to do everything his way? What's he like?
He was definitely a bit more, he was controlling, yes, he wanted things to be in a certain way. Him and DSN actually worked really, as I said, they became like these, the top of this this team, right? They were like, all the decisions went through these guys, felt like. But yeah, they were quite controlling, but not to an extent where it was like impossible to make that you can still make your place, you can still call, like, right, help out with the team, people still listen to whatever input you had. So in that sense, yeah, but they were for me, it was so weird, because I've never been the smartest, man. I gotta tell you, I'm still not the smartest, but when I met these guys, they were in a whole different level. I was still young. These were DSN, especially Karn as well, they were well traversed, like the travel, they're grown up at this point. DSN is the superstar, he's playing poker, They have like this whole different vibe.
Seems like they had kind of a professional mindset too, right? They were like more so than other players. They were trying to be pros, right?
Exactly. They were acting like super. They were acting like superstars. Yeah, 100%. And so I was a little bit like scared. You know, they were talking like super well mannered. They're using fancy words. I had no fucking clue what they were saying half of the time. You know, so they had this thing going on. But that was. So I never really got like super close with them in that sense that we became like friends that would talk after Counter-Strike was done, you know.
So it was a bit more professional. It's sort of like you play the match, you go home or whatever, or go to your room or something.
Of course we would like hang out. It was nothing. It was more like we would never get like into deep conversation with each other. I think it was everything was always kind of shallow in the way we were hanging out. We had a lot of good times, but I can't like.
I mean, along those lines, one thing I would ask about that is that it seems like actually that's something for you personally. This team also brought you a bit out of your shell, right? You got to go to some of the after parties. That's another thing. People like Carnal.
Exactly.
They always thought like if you win, you should celebrate and stuff, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It seems like it brought you out of your shell a bit, right?
They definitely shaped me as an individual for sure. Like the way they were acting, it kind of influenced me as well. Kind of to realize how you socialize a little bit more, and as I said, they pulled me out into after parties. They wanted to party all the time after tournaments. You know, you win a tournament, you party hard, man. They party hard. It was just overall a really good time. It was more like so that they are still talking 100%, right? If, like till this day, I'm 100% certain the Carnties and
Impressions
are still talking. They're still close friends, right? Sometimes you meet people like that. In this sense, it didn't like work for me. I don't think it worked for Temple either. They were like a closed knitted group, like where they were. Yeah, they were just really good friends, and they just hard.
What
to
you're
get
saying,
into
by the way. Yeah, one of the things you're talking about is also like a social phenomenon people might notice, which is the problem when you have a close circle of friends like that is part of how you define them, how close you are in bond is that the other people aren't in the group. Like they don't get, if everyone got to be in the group, you can't all be super close friends. So unfortunately, it's why when you have a clique like that, if you get left out, you feel a bit on the outside, sort of like, oh, am I not in the group?
Yeah, I think that's also why I could leave with GetRight so easily.
Right.
Leaving Fnatic to go to SK, which was one of the biggest, like, why did you leave Fnatic? How can you leave Fnatic?
Oh, don't worry. We'll come back to that. We'll come back to that.
Right.
That's a good one.
But,
I've got a pin in that one. Sorry.
Yeah, but Karn was definitely controlling, but not in like a mad way. But he was always super friendly and a nice guy all around, yeah.
Sure. Right, one thing I want to ask you is this, right? If everyone knows the joke, which now in the modern day, the modern version of it's either like Nico or Zewu, and it's like, the idea that like you just go Nico, go kill, and then he goes and rinses around for you, right? What people don't know is that joke, the original meme is Forrest. The original meme is that's what we used to make fun of Khan with. Because, look, it's part of it's because he's a very confident guy. So he was always saying, like, I'm the best IGL, and we'd be like, your tactic is Forrest, just go kill. Now, obviously, we're being a dickhead to Khan when we say that. We know it's not totally true. But some of it must be true. Like, my question to you, basically, is this. Did they? It seems like they did a good job in Fnatic of understanding like your strengths and setting you up, right? You had all the spots and sort of the places to get the frags, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think you're right. That's how I remember it to some extent as well. Not necessarily like they literally said go kill, but it was more like that's more like what I did a lot of times is that I actually went and just killed a lot of guys and opened up rounds and set it up. So I think individual skill definitely. The individual skill in that team, or particularly me and maybe perhaps Temple, then I got the help from Gooks and GetRight as well, but especially GetRight to elevated. Anyways, yeah. So in some sense, yes, you are correct. I think our tactics wasn't like super advanced in some sense. It was very straight up, set me up to get some good kills in, and I could deliver.
I want to ask you, actually, because in your teams, I would say it's also quite similar with some of the guys in the Fnatic CSGO team. They also seem to have a preference for sort of, people call it now loose Counter-Strike. I would say it's more like, essentially, this is why every team can't do this. Essentially, the idea is the individual player has to be capable of making the decisions of what to do correctly, etc. And obviously, you have to sort of naturally be able to play off each other. So it's not as simple as people think. But if you can do it, the reason it's obviously mega is if you have star players like you, you just have freedom, right? You can kind of just do what you need to do in the round. If people don't know, like this seems to be, for most of your career, the style of play that a lot of your teams have had, right?
Yeah, it's like, so I am very... Like my style is, I do get set up to a point where, but I will actually start talking, like what I want from the team as well at certain points to make things go the way that I have imagined the Rams to go. Karn, do this. Nissan, can you spam this ball? Or do this. Like, this will set me up real good. So you take command at certain points. And I think that's why, like, one of the star riflers today, Nico, I think the way he plays looks pretty much exactly, not going to say we look exactly the same, but I just recognize the way he plays, where he, I think he's communicating a lot. Not necessarily that he's the in-game leader, it's just that he has this, he's imagining the round, how it's going to play out, and he's trying, so once he gets into a position where he's starting to realize, okay, this, my imagination can now go into realization, he starts talking, can I get this from you, can you do this and this and this, and then you start taking over a little bit mid-rounds. And that's when you see plays like this pop off really hard, and Nico especially when he goes for that three or four kills in a round, and I could do the same a lot of the times as well, where you are just such a good position and kind of outplayed your opponent in that sense that you have a positional advantage.
One thing about back in the day when you were in your like peak in 1.6 was, I actually think another thing people might not realize is, if people in the modern day, like on CT side, how players like Hampus and Art do all those like crazy pushes where you never know what angle they're going to like try and flank from or check. You used to be one of the best at that, dude. Like, I remember your style was like, even though you're on CT side, it's like you would just push your area until you meet the opponent. And if he can't stop you, if you kill him, you're just going to do it again next round. It's like, that's really hard to deal with, you can imagine.
Yeah, I am. Still have that mindset. It just doesn't necessarily.
It's harder to do now, yeah.
You. I think you're spot on in the way my playstyle works. I've always been a very arrogant player. I always seen myself as the. Not necessarily everyone agrees, but I see, like, when I play, I see myself as the best player. I have to think, I think of myself as the best player on the server. So now when I enter a server, I will dominate you. That's what I'm thinking. I will own you. If you're going to stand on this angle, I'm just going to eat you up. If you're not there, I'm going to flank you. I'm going to kill everybody. And I'm just going to keep abusing that. I'm just going to keep abusing pushes, and I'm going to take aim duels against you because I feel so much better than you most of the time. Yeah, that didn't work all the time, but it did work one hell of a lot as well. That is indeed my like the play style and the way I'm thinking about Counter-Strike is that I'm a very aggressive player, or that was kind of what stood out with me, I guess, back in the days.
Another topic I had on this of like what your game was like, it sounds weird to ask, so I'll try and set it up in a way that makes sense. Basically, right, this is sound like a weird analogy, but you know how in football, if you have a player, like I'd give an example, it'd be like Zidane, it's like a classic example. One of the things that's weird when you watch them play is you can obviously see the scale and how, like, you know, all the great strengths they have. But one of the other things they have is they almost have like a quality where it doesn't feel like you can ever rush them. They just feel like they're moving at their pace and they do kind of whatever they want. And even though, you know, they might be playing the best players in the world, somehow they're always in control of the game. It looks just smooth, you know, it just doesn't look, nothing's jagged out. I always thought your game had that because there's a lot of people had good aim. There's a lot of people, by the way, even if you remember when the duck jumping came, a lot of people could do it. In fact, most of the people on your team could do it, but yours always just looked so fluid though. Are you actually a guy where, did you focus on technique? Does it come naturally to you? Because it just seemed like, it just seemed easy for you to know when, like how many bullets to spray, how to do the movement so you could always get the little extra margins out of the movement and get the headshot and dock out the way and stuff.
Yeah, I think, one thing I think people think that I don't like, for some reason, people really think that I didn't like practice or didn't play Counter-Strike. Like, the only thing I did, man, was playing Counter-Strike back, like way back. I was like living, I was breathing, eating, living Counter-Strike, man. That was everything I did. So when duck jumping came, we were playing a lot of like, so you would practice with the team and then late night, I'm talking about like 12 a.m. to like 6, 7 a.m., I was playing hide and seek. I was playing B rushes. I was surfing. So all those combined helped me develop like my moveset, like the way I moved around, and helped me develop as a, so I can transition those fun times, I transitioned into my pro style over when we were playing games, you know? So I was just like practicing a lot of different stuff all the time. I've been practicing for sure. Not necessarily, okay, sure. people have played harder than me. They practiced more, yeah, for sure. But it's not like I didn't.
I think your problem, dude, is this, is what people have done is this. I've obviously probably done it myself in my narratives. They've taken the fact that you played with Get Right, who is probably the most extreme example ever of the guy. Like, I've always told the story. The joke with Get Right was, if he lost the final, he has to play 2 hours of DM to make up for it. And if he won the final, he gives himself a break and only plays 1 hour of DM. That's like the joke. But like, that's almost true. That's kind of how he was. But that's an extreme, obviously. Like, the joke is almost no one was practicing like he was. He was a bit of a nutter. But so compared to him, you weren't as much. But you were obviously still a pro, yeah. And the other thing is, the other thing I would say about you is, if people look at your longevity, I feel like you've done a really good job of managing how much you practice, though. Like, you can't, because here's the thing, if you go like Get Right 100% all the time, there's very few people can ever manage that. They'd be doing it half the time he played. Like, I think you've done a good job of managing, like, keeping the love of the game, right? Practicing hard when you need to, having times when you ease off a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think I came to realization very quickly that once it was vacation times or breaks or anything, I would definitely take advantage of that to kind of refresh and refocus for the upcoming season. I think you're on point where, in a way, that people could play like too much at some points. And as I said, they're going to have an amazing career. Get Right has like one of the best careers you can have as a counter player, accomplish pretty much everything an individual wants to do, almost at the same level as Simple. Simple is about to overtake absolutely everybody in the pace is going, but Get Right is still going to be remembered. And during that time, no one can touch him, man. But I think, as you said, I think also the careers are going to be so much shorter. But it's a trade-off. Hey, if you're Simple and you're just freaking whacking everybody, if you're Get Right and you're just dominating number one spot all around, man, take six years of pro player, I'll take it, man.
Plus, to be fair, back then they weren't giving you like $1 million a year. You know, like, it might have been a different, you know, you might have had a year where you said, maybe I'll bonk it down even more.
No, but I did play a lot. Still, like in NIP, I still played a lot. So almost not lagging behind. Like, it was not like super crazy stuff. But I'm not always in Counter-Strike. I always had a side game. I always played side games. I know back in Fnatic, 1.6 people were complaining that I was playing Dota during my free time, and it was like I was like what are you doing on free time? I was watching football. Oh, great. So I can't, like,
exactly,
so I, yes. I can play Dota, but you can go watch football, you, like, yes. Always. So because I was playing a different game, I always got like shade thrown at me because I was not dedicated enough. It was just that I love playing games, man. My life has been circling around playing video games. Before I was playing Counter-Strike, I was playing on the NES, I was SNES, I was Sega. I just love playing video games, man.
I feel like there's a world where you could have been like a Dota pro, maybe, right? I feel like you might have been an alternate path you could have gone.
Definitely, I think so, without sounding too arrogant. Yeah, I was a pretty good ranked player back in the days in Dota. That if I would have wanted to pursue that at that time, yeah, I think I could definitely have made it.
What sort of role would you have played, though? If you played Dota, what position would you be, and what sort of player would you be?
So I was playing mid.
Of course. Come on. So what sort of champion, what hero are you using here? Come on.
Oh, no, I can't.
Storm Spirit or something ridiculous? What were you playing back in the day?
Back in the day, I think it was Nevermore was his name, right? Shadow Team. I can't even remember all the names anymore, man. It was a long time ago. But yeah, true. I did play quite a bit of Dota, but Dota was not attractive at that time.
If people don't know, those games weren't considered pro games. Like, as you say, they were the game you played for fun after you finished practicing CS, right? To let your head down, as it were, right?
Yeah, it really was. But they had a pro scene, but it was not. It was not like the attraction for becoming pro
niche.
In that.
Yeah,
it was very niche, man. It was not looking good. But now, yeah, look at it now. Yeah, it turned
out wild.
Great, at that time, no, it was not a decision. I actually wanted to become a Worker 3 player, man. That was like, I actually practiced really hard to become a Worker 3 player before I break through in Counter-Strike. And I was so glad when at tournaments back in the days, you remember where you would have a Counter-Strike tournament, there were always other tournaments being played. And
it used to be cool. Yeah, there used to be Quake or StarCraft or something. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And always hand in hand, it felt like the Warcraft had the same tournament at the same time as Counter-Strike was. So I was living life, man, watching Warcraft 3.
Oh, I see,
watching, right. Yeah, watching Sky and everybody, Spirit Moon and everybody just play. It was so amazing, man. I just love
it. By the way, on this topic, though, I've got an angle I want to take here, which is, In similar fashion to the fact people think he didn't practice, I also think part of it's because, as we said at the beginning, because he didn't do a lot of interviews, people think, right, that means you're, like, super shy. Like, I don't know if I totally buy that, dude. Maybe early you were a bit shy. I got the vibe it's more like you think interviews are annoying and you don't have to fucking do them, you know, and you don't want to have people asking you annoying questions about shit from years ago and stuff in English. Like, you're good at Counter-Strike, you don't want to have to speak English as well, you know, like. So here's the question, though. I actually think the element that's gone missing, though, dude, is people don't get what you're saying earlier. People don't realise your competitive drive. Like, here's something they wouldn't know, Forrest. You might seem on camera like you're always the super nice guy with a smile. I've seen you when you lose a big game, and especially, by the way, if you think that's a team that you're supposed to beat, or like they won in bullshit fashion, or something like back when people were using the CZ and everything was bullshit, and you're like, what the hell? Like, you're a competitive guy.
Yeah, 100% I'm competitive. People think that I don't care sometimes. It feels like people don't think that I don't care about it. Dude, I wouldn't be here if I weren't competitive. I wouldn't sit here today. I wouldn't play those games if I weren't competitive. I wanted to be the best. I still always want to be the best, whatever I do. So losing games, yeah, I've been super angry. We have fights within the team. I've been salty as hell sometimes, man. I'm not always a happy, smiling dude. I can go rage mode. It happens to everybody. I think it's. I think you. If you're not raging at some point, I mean, what's the point of playing? Some frustration is gonna get to you. If you lose the game, you know you were supposed to win. That frustration is gonna get to you, 100%. But that's also something you need to learn to deal with and move forward. And that's why we have pro players as well. People who are able to push through that and evolve as an individual. So yeah, 100% competitive. That is 100% true.
Because I always think on that topic, by the way, that's an area where people at different levels of the scene can't have the perspective of someone at a level they haven't been at. Because I'll give you an example. If you were someone who was stuck at the level where, you know, a great tournament for you is like you make the semifinals once, or like, oh, maybe we beat a big team, they would think naively just winning a couple of tournaments is like, wow, I'd never need anything else. But if you're in the position, like in your career, for example, you've been in a million finals. Like in that scenario, the pressure's even more. Now the pressure is you have to win every final. And if you don't, everyone that you don't win every major, like the joke is in this interview, in theory, I'm going to have to touch a bunch of them. Like, those are painful memories, right? Those are like, you don't just forget about them because you won some other tournaments. Like, the losses count, they stack up, right?
Yeah, they do. Like, regarding when you mentioned this major, like, I even watch back to, like, old games now, and I can still be frustrated when I watch the games back in this.
Do you watch back and, like, hope you're going to win or something? Because I've got that vibe when I watch it.
Yeah, I do, actually. Sometimes I
know what you mean.
I can imagine myself like, oh, yes, I'm going to get the kills this time. Yeah. I will kill him this time. And I don't. I still don't. I still don't kill him. I still lose the final. And it still hurts me, man. So fucking tragic looking back. Anyways, man, I've been thinking like, okay, now we're in the topic. I've been watching like, you know, the DreamHack Winter.
The one against LDLC, I'm guessing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one where you're on championship point in the third map, right? You were that close.
Exactly, on overpass. That's the scenario I think I watched the most.
Oh, that's the one you run back. You want how we could have won.
Yeah, exactly. How we could have won. That's like the one that got away, you know?
Yes.
A lot of losses do stack up. They still do hurt, but they also form you as a player, I think. You learn from those, and I think that's also what was pretty cool with the NIP watch was that we were able to lose, I think it was four major finals. Four major finals and still push through on the fifth. I know it's not like, I don't think a lot of teams have that stamina or...
No, most would disband or they'd get depressed.
I don't think they could have handled the pressure, but I think what it was an amazing thing for us and the team we have was being able to push through the misery of losing not only one, not only two, but four major finals. And on the fifth one, still being able to put on one hell of a show and actually come through this time. I think that kind of cemented, I'm so glad that we did win one because I think that also cemented us as a core in NIP that we had that one trophy. But also now we're in the major still, they still hurts, man. Especially the Katowice one against the Polish guys. That one,
of course,
was rough. Yeah.
Right, obviously, as you can see, we're jumping around a bit, but I'm kind of keeping the topics together so we can explore them. So a similar one, right? And even though this is, again, coming out of like the career a second, because it's on the topic of like confidence, where do you see yourself? I want to ask you the question that I hinted at earlier. So here's what's weird. I mean, we've even had these conversations in real life. I've even told you this, right? People think I hate Forrest just because I actually think Neo was the greatest of all time in 1.6. It's not even a hate angle. And so what happens is, because if the framing is always set up as say why Forrest isn't as good as Neo, then it'll sound like I'm hating on Forrest. But as I would still, like, I've always, here's what I always say. I think personally it's a preference thing, and it's what style people like or what they value more. I think it's a totally legit conversation in the same way as in football. I think if you think, like, it's one thing if you think Messi's better than Ronaldo, but it's a conversation though. There's at least like a discussion to be had, you know. It's got, wow, you've got to put all the candidates in the conversation and then you pick from it. So what I would ask you is this, right? This might shock fans, Forrest, but on the one hand, part of me feels like you said earlier, you're a confident guy. You do think you're the greatest. You do think you were the best in 1.6, or maybe when you were playing, you did. But this might shock a fan, but you yourself have told me there's times you think maybe Neil was the greatest, right?
Yeah, I've said it in interviews as well, that I think he might come out on top of this one, actually. I think he was a very, very complete player in 1.6. And I've never, as we stated earlier, I've never seen myself, like, when I'm playing, yes, I consider myself the best. But outside of the game, I see myself as a nobody still, or at that time, a nobody. Well, how can I compete with this guy? Like, Neo, what, are you kidding me? How can I get close to this guy? But yeah, I think Neo, he had a longer career in 1.6 than I did. Not that career, like, the longevity is always what you go by, but he was successful way earlier 1.6, and he kept that onwards. It was not like he was super good in the beginning and then kind of fell down. He just kept on getting better and better and better and better. That was the thing that was scary with him. I was definitely up there competing with him. There were a lot of players who were really good, but I think definitely me and Neo stood out a bit. But I think I give him that share as well. I think it's also really nice. Like as you said, it's a discussion. Some people haven't seen the whole of Neo's career. People maybe only watched my games. Didn't really, because it was hard to keep track of everything. Sure. As you said, if you wanted to follow everything, you had to download every single specific demo. You had to watch those demos. It's not as accessible as it is now to look up things. It was kind of like the real, super hard to really go by. So if people were following Swedish Counter-Strike, yeah, they would consider me the best. Or if people were fans of Fnatic, yeah, we're the best. But I mean, if we would look at the whole pictures, perhaps Neo do come out on top, yeah.
What about this, though? Because the one thing I wonder is, you said it there, like, you two stood out. Because I would agree. Like, if you're going year by year, obviously there's other names, like Markov has his years, and then way back Zet or whoever. But the difference is, or Trace. But the difference is, usually, they were, like, 1 or 2 years. At the time, did you actually get a sense during this? Like, I don't know if you've ever seen any of these sports documentaries. Like, you know, like, Bjorg and Mac and Roll. Like, they know, like, at the time, like, we are just the rivals. You sort of get a vibe of, like, that is the guy I'm going to be meeting in every final. I'm going to have to beat him, or he's going to beat me, or, you know, we're going for the same thing. Did you ever sense at the same time when it was with Neo?
I never really had that sense with Neo, actually. Neo also, I didn't really talk much to Neo back in the days, and I couldn't get a sense of him as a individual. But the one I saw myself as a rival against was definitely Set. He was the guy who I felt like I need to beat this guy to like become something. So he was like my biggest rival, I would say, because people were always comparing him with me as well. People were saying Seth was better this year sure. than Forrest, and I would be like hell no, he's not better than me, man. Me and Marcus actually did play Rocket Arena 3 as well, so that was becoming a competition.
Oh, you're also both good in other games as well. Yeah
exactly. So me and Marcus were playing in Rocket Arena 3, a mod for Quake, where we would play one-on-one against each other, and even those like offline where no one even knows about this, but like both of us were super competitive. Okay. We were like angry at each other, you know. We were playing one-on-ones in Quake, and it was like crazy stuff. So he was like my true rival, but I think in my opinion, but I think that is also because I could talk with him. I could get a feel for an individual who I can like see in front of me as a rival. I couldn't do that with Neo. Neo was
a very mysterious guy. He was super quiet.
Very mysterious. Also, as you said, also very quiet. Kind of like me in that sense in the beginning. He was also very like relaxed, didn't really care much, not really arrogant. He was just doing his thing. He was having a good time playing Counter-Strike. That's it. But Marcus, he was loud, he was vocal, he was coming at you, he was like a lion, you know, he was hunting you down, he wanted to get you. So that then he kind of forced that rivalry on you, and you kind of accepted that challenge. So I think Seth would be, and Neo was more like you. You kind of look at him and you give him a head nod and you acknowledge his skill. I would say Seth would be my rival in this.
Even though you were very obviously magnanimous and gracious with your answer there, where you said maybe Neo could be the great Seth. Put it this way, if I gave you one of those mad scenarios, like, you know, like we're in the prime of both your careers, aliens come to Earth and they're like, right, we're going to play a Counter-Strike match, and if you lose, we just wipe out the whole human race. You would pick yourself as the player, right? You're going to be the one who saves the world, right?
100%. 100%. No doubt in my mind.
Here's the thing I want you to explain, though. Here's what a fan can't understand: is how when you're outside the game, can you be like humble or be like, "Hey, oh, I don't know if I'm." But when, what changes when you go in the game? How does it? Why does the mindset change? How can you explain it to a fan?
It's
like you're saying, when you load in, you do think you're the best, right? You're going to get this killer. You're going to beat this guy. You've got to get this guy.
Yeah, you're 100% right. But I think it's because, like, I know, but it's hard to know how good you are, in a sense. I couldn't get a feel for how good I am. It was not like people were throwing around the terms like, oh my God, Forrest, you are the best player. Like, people weren't throwing shit around back then.
Yeah, true.
It was hard to get a sense of how good you were. You didn't have stats the same way you do today. You couldn't really see what, like, it was more like... It was so hard to judge how good you were. You had a lot of good players. Yes, Neo. You had Neo. You had Seth. You had me. You had Wally. You had, Markov. You had Sonic. You had Trace. There was a lot of players back in the days that could all, like, if you just look at the players and how the way they played, they could all be the best player of Counter-Strike. You had Getright. Getright is arguably the best 1.6 player. If you look at the term, like, when he became a pro player, and what he did during his stint as a pro player, I think he's like unmatched. But if we take in consideration what, like, it's a hard discussion, man. It's a super hard discussion. It depends on how you want to look at it. If you want to look at a time span of from when Getright became, like, from the years of 2009 up till 2012, I believe it is, Getright is hands down the greatest Counter-Strike player ever. But if you look before that, then you're gonna have it's gonna be rougher. Then you have me, and then you have Neo. And it's not like I was bad when Getro was playing. I was I was hand in hand with him as well. Oh, yeah. So it's like it's a not hand in hand. I was exaggerating a little bit. I was a little bit further down, but it was really good.
You were there. You're in the room.
But it's so yeah. It's a hard discussion, but I can't explain how it works. Yes, I am humble. I see. I acknowledge Neo. I can see what he has done as an individual. I think he might had a rougher time carrying, perhaps. I was surrounded eventually by Getright, by the means of Getright. But he also had a really good team. I mean, it's hard. I don't know why my phone took a picture there, whatever.
It's all good.
But it's like, I think I would give it to him in that sense that I think he, not only has he been a solid player throughout 1.6. I think he did it way earlier than me, and he was very successful then. So he had a longer career of being like one of the best players during the whole stint of 1.6. I came in a little bit later. I think that's the only advantage I can give him, that I came in later. If I would have played in the same time span as him, I think I would have come out on top. But like seeing that, what he did before I become a pro player, and he actually, not like he was, as I said earlier, it was not like he was starting on top and then fell down as the year went by. It was like he was on top and then we just kept on rising until he like took over the scene. And so he was doing this, I was still a noob, and then I joined in here, and then I became, and then we go like on the same time span. So I think we were neck on neck when I started playing, but I would give him the upper hand because he played longer in that sense.
There we go. This video was kindly supported by Kill Your Inner Loser, Ahmed Haju, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Paul Villa, Travis Goff, Adam Oaks, Animosity, Bot Pounder 420, Hades, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Piercy, Tobias Bernasconi, Tosh, Toucan, and as always, special thanks goes out to Jerky's Minion. Do you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my shows? Would you like to ask a question in my Patreon AMA? Maybe you want teasers, find out who the next Reflections guests are or upcoming talk show guests. Do you want to take part in one of those long donator discussions with me? Well, if any of the above or more sound interesting to you, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Skrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.